Yes Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Blitz is defined as a sudden savage attack. It is indeed all this. The effect is sure. The premise is simple. It's a basic primal confrontation, man to man. No excuses are offered. None accepted.
Welcome to the latest edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com.
Looks like a radio station.
Now, here are your hosts, lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers.
Pure athlete, yeah.
A transcend race, hombre.
Matt Butler.
I don't talk man. I back it up.
And we are sock full of that, man.
Damn right.
And Jeff Howe.
It's still real to me, damn it.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
If you're going to blitz, come strong, but don't come at all.
Coming strong with another edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howe, and I think we have a game this week, maybe, hopefully, I guess. As of right now, Texas and Baylor are going to play on Saturday. Maybe that changes. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know, but we'll get into Texas and Baylor. But, boys, we got bigger issues to talk about on this week's show. I said to close last week's show, prepare yourself because it's going to be one of those weeks, and goodness gracious me, was it ever one of those weeks.
Yes, sir.
On the 40 Acres. We'll break it all down here on the latest edition of Longhorn Blitz, and let me bring in the rest of the team that will be alongside me for this adventure. He is the master of the soundboard, the drop machine extraordinaire. He is our lead research analyst on Longhorn Blitz and a daily fantasy guru. He is Matt Butler. Matt, how are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, man. Yourself?
I got to admit, I usually don't do this, but real quick, over the weekend, Saturday night, actually, I'm flipping back and forth between the ALCS Game 7 and Alabama-Georgia.
Man, a lot of stuff going on.
My wife needs me to do something, so I hastily get up from my desk, didn't realize my phone charger, my charging cord for my phone is in the floor. I step on it, Rod, and it just happened to be prong up, and the thing broke the skin on the bottom of my foot.
Ooh.
So, and there's probably not a worse place to get a cut than the bottom of your foot, because there's really not a whole lot you can do.
Oh, man.
It's going to take forever to scab. Yeah, and I didn't realize until Sunday that I'd, like, bled all over the hallway.
And, yeah. Those foot injuries. Yeah, I don't know.
Got blood on the bathroom rug.
Man.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. But we march along, nonetheless. A man who, look, he's had his share of broken bones and bumps and bruises. And
those foot injuries, man, they do suck.
And bloody messes throughout his decorated football career. He is the third member of our team in our lockdown corner here on Longhorn Blitz. Lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, fourth-round draft choice of the New York Giants in 2003, spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL. When he was done with football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas, and the 40 Acres, where he earned his degree. Whenever that T-ring comes in, we will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU. And when you get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they make sure you get one of those black cards. Number 21 in your program, number one in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers.
Thanks for the intro, brother.
And guys, I said it was going to be one of those weeks. It was one of those weeks. And I think when you boil it down to whether you want to talk about the Eyes of Texas controversy, whether you want to talk about the product in the field, however you want to couch it, this feels like Tom Herman's days are numbered, and he is running out of time, and he is almost out of time to get this right. And I really didn't expect us to be here before the end of October, but when you have three games in a row like this program had, where you can make the argument, hey, you're a fumble and a couple plays away from being 4-0, well, you're also a miracle comeback and an onside kick recovery away from being 1-3 right now. So however you want to slice it doesn't matter. But, Rod, I'll start with you. It feels like better than a 50-50 shot as we sit here today that somebody other than Tom Herman is coaching this football team in 2021.
That it seems to be trending that way. Obviously, things can change.
They can.
Tom Herman obviously still can win a ton of games and surprise people. But it seems like he's lost the moderate, kind of moderate group in the fan base. The extremists, as I've always said, the extremists have always been, fire Tom Herman. After losing to Maryland, they're like, fire Tom Herman. He's terrible.
Well, there's extremists on both sides.
Yeah, and those are the extremists in the fan base. And, you know, they've been there for a while. But now I think kind of the rational, moderate fan, you know, that he usually, I think most of those people are, oh, no. You know, they see the issues. They understand it takes time. They understand you got to build up to, you know, kind of a crescendo with the program. Even that person now, that rational Longhorn fan, when you talk to them, they'll tell you, yeah, I'm pretty much, my faith and trust in Tom Herman is gone. So when you lose that fan, that means you probably lost most of the fan base. And I don't know what that percentage may be.
Well, Let's go to rational fan, Matt. I think you're very
rational fan. You got that, one of those on the show.
You're very much in that group,
you're
Matt.
You're into stats and facts.
And a lot of your I know a lot of your thoughts on the program are data driven and analysis driven. And I'll be honest, I don't think I've ever heard you just spout off an opinion without having something to back it up. I guess scale of 1 to 10, like, where is your confidence level? If you could speak for the rational fans out there, what's your confidence level that Tom Herman can turn this thing around?
Well, and that's where I sort of keep going back and forth in my mind about, say, turning it around or getting it, because it seems to be, it has gone in the right direction, maybe not at the trajectory you want it to, mm-hmm. and it isn't on the path, and it's not definitely linear. Not linear. Yeah. But I would say the worst thing about it is the indifference, sort of. Like, it's sort of like you're stuck in a situation during the season, and you know he's not going to be – a change isn't going to be made immediately. It's not going to be made during – so you have to let it play out, but you don't like what you're seeing overall. But the results haven't been exactly what you assumed, but it's better than before. It's an odd situation to be in. But it sort of has came toward the specifics around Herman. Just, I don't know, I guess I do have more of a macro approach for the season, so I haven't necessarily been in the weeds on it for every single detail and going back and forth. But when I realize that some indifference is in my mind, in my opinion of Texas, then that's not a good sign. Because if I'm sort of indifferent about it right now and just be like, yeah, let's see how it plays out, then that's not where you necessarily want to be as an emotional sports fan. And most people come to be an emotional sports fan. And if you aren't enjoying it, or if it's giving you a lot of like questions about the direction and maybe things that you had hoped had been fixed, but then now seem to be maybe popping up in areas and these consistent or just being inconsistent across the board and at all levels, it isn't as if there's one alley. I mean, you have a pretty good offense, but I think anybody with Sam Ellinger is going to have a really good offense. You can have bad offensive line play. You can have holes all over the place, but like the problematic discipline stuff and the dumb mistakes and then just sort of those things that pile up, and it's like, well, those are the things we were killing this former coach for, and those are the things we're killing this former coach for, and they're still here. So that means the problem isn't fixed, even though you could say it's sort of headed in the correct direction, not in the right direction though.
Rod, help me find the term here. I don't know what term I'm looking for, but when you look at the last two times we've been here, and this situation we're in seems eerily similar to 2013, where, let's face it, I mean, we're at the point now where in the Texas market, people are openly talking about Urban Meyer, and we're far out. Oh, yeah. The hay is out of the barn. A horse is out of the barn. Nope. Toothpaste is out of the tube. Whatever analogy you want to use, like we're down the road already.
Yeah, there's no decorum anymore about, ooh, let's not discuss that
during the
season. Like now, that's how people have lost faith. They're just generally discussing another option.
Decorum got kicked in the face when everybody was storming out of the door to give their opinion on this. This feels like we're exactly where we were following this program in 2013, where you got to a point in that season where the message was clear. Mack Brown needs to win the Big 12 or somebody else is going to be coaching this team next year. Mm-hmm. And I think Tom Herman is in a very similar situation. But here's the difference between Tom Herman and Mack Brown. And I even think Tom Herman and Charlie Strong.
Where do you want to start?
Well, there's a difference. It's in this situation. I know we don't have enough show time to get into what you're suggesting there, Rod. But I'll look at it from this standpoint. So when Mack was on his way out, we know Mack had, I guess, political capital built up with some of the right people. He had Joe Jamail and some really powerful people on his side.
And
he had the ear of Bill Powers and people in a position to make decisions.
and a label of legend next to his name at the school.
Right,
which is,
right. But just in the context of the power players making the decisions, how well are you tied into those guys? Mm-hmm. Mac knew how to play the game. That's no secret to anybody, and that's why things got bungled the way they did at the end, and then you had the whole banquet situation, and there's definitely not enough show time to go into that deal. Maybe that's an off-season topic.
A whole show.
But yeah, exactly.
It has been.
That could be a series of shows. Yeah, it's been the whole entirety of this show, I think. But at any rate, so we know Mac had, I guess, political capital, Rod, and that's the right term I'm using, mm-hmm. built up. And Charlie didn't necessarily have that per se, but Charlie at least had two things working for him. He had a president and an athletic director that really wanted it to work out for him. And you had a president get on a plane to go help him hire an offensive coordinator. Like, that doesn't, regardless of how it got there, I mean, Greg Fenves could have said, no, I'm not going to go do that. You're the head football coach. You go take care of it. But so you had, I think, people in charge that wanted it to work for Charlie Strong. And you had a fan base that, even though the vast majority of Texas fans by the end kind of had their opinions of Charlie Strong as a football coach, was the one thing we always say about Charlie Strong, Rod. Hey, he's such a nice
Charlie
guy.
Strong. He's a nice guy, man.
Really like Charlie Strong, just as a man, as a person. Mm-hmm. Like him. Tom Herman doesn't have either of those things in his favor.
He doesn't get the nice guy discount, that's for sure.
And he doesn't have enough political capital built up at this point.
No, he doesn't hang out with boosters and donors enough.
Especially because...
Now we know he's not even friends with the athletic director.
That's where I was going, because...
the athletic director threw him under the bus.
This sounds like McAvey. Now, like, literally all the things McAvey.
Sounds just like McAvey.
As we sit here recording the show, Tom Herman has not had his Monday press conference. So something could get said in that press conference that... adds to the story. But as we sit here right now, what we know, Rod, based on what we reported at Horns 24/7, mm-hmm. what Chris Del Conte himself has said, specifically related to the Eyes of Texas situation, it sounds like there was one narrative being built up that this was Chris Del Conte's fault and, you know, Tom Herman shouldn't have to take the blame for it.
I think it was a narrative that there was both of their faults. Like, it was both of them had equal culpability in it. Right.
But then you get to the situation where what we reported on Horns 24/7, where we had four or five coaches on the 40 acres go on the record saying, no, we had multiple conversations as coaches across this university with Chris Del Conte.
That was the plan.
You had Eddie Reese saying this is specifically how he said to handle the Eyes of Texas situation. Yeah. And is anybody going to argue with Eddie Reese?
Sounds like this situation had a lot of coach speak on a topic that shouldn't have coach speak when spoken about public.
That's a great way to put it, Matt. There shouldn't have been any sugarcoat. It should have been, here's the deal. This is what it was.
Sometimes when coaches get up to, like, just me from fantasy, I'll tune out a lot of guys because they're just sort of blowing smoke and aren't necessarily saying the details. Like, no, wait, we aren't talking football here. What exactly did y'all agree upon before the season?
Yeah. So you've got that, and then you've got Chris Del Conte coming out and telling Brian Davis, the Austin American Statesman, even after he publishes 40 Acres Insider newsletter, like, the contents, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the contents of that letter should not have been a surprise to any coach on that campus, mm-hmm. based on the conversations.
Yeah.
So, Rod, what it all means is maybe the one guy who you thought could have Tom Herman's back in all this, the guy that gave him an extension a couple of years ago, the guy that allowed him to blow out most of his coaching staff and bring in seven new full-time coaches, mm-hmm. I don't know how anybody could say Chris Del Conte and Tom Herman are on the same page right now. Maybe they are, but the perception is that they're not. So anyway you slice it, the only thing Tom Herman can do at this point to kind of pull the nose up on this deal is win football games. There's no safety net for him. He's got to win football games at this point.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. I thought he had learned from Mac. Obviously, he didn't learn from Mac. You know, Mac was smart enough to bring the boosters and the donors to practice, and I'm sure after that he was hanging out with them and going to dinner with them, and you know, and him and DeLoss Dobbs were really close, right? They, you know, several times a week, you know, DeLoss Dobbs was hanging out with Mac at practice, and he and Mac Brown, I'm sure, after practice were hanging out and talking about big picture macros, things like that. That's Tom Herman's fault for not learning from the master who you not only got a chance to be a, you know, grad assistant for, but also who was there when you were introduced on the 40 acres. And I'm sure it would have
the loss.
Yeah. And the way Daryl K. Royo gave all the lessons to Mac Brown, right? About the BBs in the box. And by the way, the BBs are not back in the box right now. But all those lessons that Mac Brown learned from DKR about how to be the head coach at the University of Texas, how to conduct yourself, what's unbecoming of the head coach at Texas, what's expected of you at Texas, how many hats do you have to wear, and all this, those types of things, and how do you wear those hats? Tom Herman never learned those lessons from Mac, so I don't know whether it was just posturing to have Mac there up around him, and then he and Mac shook hands, and then it was just, all right, see ya, or whether he actually leaned on him for counsel, but he did not take those lessons to heart, because if one thing we learned from Mac is entrench yourself in the, you know, in the donor booster world. You have to heavily entrench yourself. You need to find out who the top 10 guys are, and you need to be having dinner with those guys and drinks with those guys, and they need to be at practice. They need to feel like Tom Herman's my friend. And I, that's what got to the point where Mac Brown, they had to bring in somebody just to fire him. He was so politically, you know what I mean? He had so much prodigious clout, and he was so politically entrenched on the 40 acres. They literally had to bring in somebody to fire him. Hell, they wanted to bring in Oliver Luck, and Oliver Luck said, I'm not firing Mac Brown. That's Mac Brown.
You do
hell
not.
Like, that's how
do
powerful
that?
Mac Brown was. Like, no, I'm not
too
firing Mac
job.
Brown. No. I had to bring in an a-hole like OG Stevie P to come fire Mac Brown because nobody wanted to do it because that's how deep he was. You know what I mean? It's almost like Capitol Hill in Washington, how these politicians, how they're so heavily entrenched. Like, who the hell can get them out of Washington? You can't. You know what I mean? They got they know where all the bodies are buried. They got all exactly. They got the network and they got friends in high places. And Mac figured that out. He had, you know, the athletic director was one of his friends, didn't want to fire him. None of the boosters and the donors, you had to go, they had to form their own kind of coup just to try to get him out. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I'm saying, how did Tom Herman not learn that lesson?
Yeah.
How is he not close with one or two, three, four of the, you know, the big time boosters on campus? How is he not close to CDC? How are you not having drinks with CDC three times a week just to go hang out? Man, listen, man, we got to talk. And that should be the case. Like, you guys should be that. You should be closer to him than any other coach because he wants to be closer to you than any other coach because he knows that you matter more than any other coach. He wants to have his fingerprints all over that program and he wants you guys to work together. So the fact that Tom Herman has isolated himself to that extent, that's him. And now it's just him and Michelle. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you got. Just you and your ride or die. You didn't learn your lessons, man. Hell, you were at Ohio State. I'm sure Urban Meyer had his political ties within that community.
I mean, you would think so because from what talking to people close to that Ohio State program, the way, I mean, it's just like any big-time football program, right? Ohio State and Texas are very similar just in terms of the way the donor base is and how involved they want to be or need to be.
And some people will call it a cesspool.
But I mean, Ohio it's where you're living. It's your environment. You need to be able to adapt.
I always say all politicians are corrupt because in order, the business of politics, you have to get your hands dirty in order to be effective. Unfortunately, that is the cesspool of life. That's why President Trump got elected on, I'm going to drain the swamp. Because we all know it's a freaking cesspool. Same thing with Texas. We all know the way it is. We all know boosters and donors running. Hell, Jay Hartzell over there is so... Remember, there was a report that Jay Hartzell was at that meeting by some other organization. And Jay Hartzell, he went out to the media and said, I wasn't at that damn meeting. He's separating himself from CDC. Because he got to throw him under the bus and go, well, CDC did this, all this. That's on him. Y'all guys know what I did. I did the right thing. Everybody applauded. CDC is over there doing something else, and he ain't got his coaches in the room. So he still separated himself to the extent where he can always throw himself under the bus, and that's what's happening on the 40 acres. And by the way, just like it's a problem in Washington, it's a problem on the 40 acres. You get to the point where the culture, I always say administrations win championships. You get to the point where the culture is everybody's just trying to cover their own butt. All right? CYA, that's the mode everybody gets in around here. Even the coaches, to Mac Brown's extending, even getting on him too.
Yeah.
Right? And top down, everybody, instead of doing their job, everybody's too focused on keeping their job. All right, that's the focus. And the same thing in Washington. Instead of doing your job as a politician, all you focus on is getting reelected. As soon as you get elected, you're trying to get reelected. What about doing your damn job we elected you to do? And over there on the 40 acres, trust me, I've been over there. A lot of that is everybody's covering their own butt. Right, whether it be the president, CDC throwing his coach under the bus, and that's fine. He may deserve it. My point is that you don't want that culture. That is part of why Texas has been lagging behind the last few years. It is a toxic culture over there. There's toxicity happening over there. It ain't all. You say Tom Herman ain't start all this toxicity on the 40 acres.
No.
A lot of this existed way before him, and he is just a patsy.
You know,
he's just a fall guy in a lot of this, man. I'm telling you.
And then you add the multi layers to it. And, you know, you brought up some great points there. And when you talk about not only do you have those three that you mentioned between Hartzell, DeConte, and Herman, this isn't a situation like, say, in other situations where you have like a Mac and DeLoss with this a relationship together.
Bill Powers, all guys working
three
together.
Guys separate, all hired differently, and they all come incrementally differently. Yep. So it's sort of like when you get to the NFL and like, hey, well, it's not the GM's guy. Well, this isn't the coach's guy. And it's like you're nobody's guys, and that's sort of when you see the dominoes start to fall. It's the same reason why, like, say, a guy like Adam Gase hasn't been fired from the Jets, because, like, the previous GM and him and then the new coach, they weren't on the same page. Now, once you get these all independent of one another, you can all be looking out for your individual sake and not necessarily be on the same page, and you aren't even with the guy that necessarily you want and you didn't hire into it. And then when you get to the fact that you brought up Mac and Mac's relationship at the time with DeLoss, and if you go and look at the way the timetable played out, I mean, it sounded crazy at the time, because back in the day, 10 wins was big and Mac had been improving the program in 99 and in 2000. But if he doesn't have those relationships with boosters and doesn't have that relationship with DeLoss,
he doesn't make
Mac
it.
Doesn't make it to 04. He doesn't make it to 05.
You know, McAvick's a prime example. He won two championships and didn't make it.
He lost
because he was an a-hole and nobody liked.
He won the Big 12 in 96 and 97 and 4-7. You're out. And then the thing that happens with Mac, I mean, if Mac doesn't have those relationships formed, because there was a really big battery group that when you had Barnes show up, when Mac showed up, and then DeLoss, and then you had this, it was this whole seemed like athletic program, even with Augie had showed up, and it was at the same time they were growing together.
Yeah.
And this situation, totally different, because you have new president, you have new AD, you have no relationship. So if you because, I mean, at first you wanted Charlie Strong situation. We just want a football coach. Well, we got a football coach, and that's not what everybody wanted. Everybody wanted more than just a football coach.
Football coach that didn't win, though.
Exactly.
The football coach that would just win.
So, but what did Herman do? Herman showed up and wanted to maybe be that guy. You envisioned he would be that guy, but it's almost as if he went just all football and he's just been worrying about football and ain't worrying about anything else. And it's a very, he had it set up for him. He had Mac in the front row with DeLoss, with Sally, giving him a hug and a kiss. I'm like, he was a baby when he showed up to get the job. And I was like, oh, wow, they're all the BBs are back together, that stuff. And then it's like he just went into his like little football hole and has not came out to do anything else. And then if you do that and you win and they let you have your Saban, you do whatever you want to do. But if you don't, and then you don't have these relationships, you don't have this longevity, you don't have this power dynamic between you and your colleagues that works well, all those things aren't there, then it gets really easy to just change one thing and try to be able to form that chemistry, especially when, say, you have this AD and this president that weren't guys that came and handpick them. Now, you knew CDC and Herman talk well of one another, but, you know, they've been independent, forming their careers other spots. You don't have the many years formed up the way Mac did that bottom that time to be able to go through all the talks of 02, 03, 04 to survive, even though 04 people wanted him out after that Oklahoma game. And then you're able to hold on just enough for 05.
Yeah, to your point, Matt, if Mac didn't have that political capital built up, think back. This isn't revisionist history. Like, he might not have survived the 03 season. You have the 65-13 loss to Oklahoma, and then you lose that Holiday Bowl to Washington State. Like,
03 felt just like 12 when that happened, blowout in 12 with Oklahoma with Mac again. But that's how it felt back in 03.
Yeah, there's a chance he doesn't survive that. But here's the difference, right? A difference, I should say. I keep saying the difference, but it's a difference. You know, you think back to, I think back to when, let's look at when Charlie Strong got the job, right? And Charlie and I never had this conversation, but this was implied by people close to the program, and you could kind of get this vibe. You know, Charlie didn't schmooze with the boosters. He wasn't really, I don't know if there's any single reporter that he was really tight with or anything like that. And I think because Charlie had the mindset of, look, if I don't win games, they're going to fire me anyway.
He's right.
So I'm not going to waste my time dealing with all that.
That's a good point.
It seems like, though, Tom Herman's approach has been, I'm going to win, so I don't need to concern myself with any of that.
And he did, 2018.
Right.
Let's not forget. I think that's what changed everything for him. He was probably so everything confirmed my beliefs were right. And then that's probably when he went down the bad rabbit hole.
But the downfall for Charlie Strong, and where it looks like it's headed for Tom Herman, unless things just take a different trajectory than where they're on now, we've had this conversation many times, and I've said this. You can look back. You know, I think about programs like Michigan, Tennessee, Nebraska. You can even look like Ron Zook at Florida. Some of the coaches, USC's run off. When it doesn't work out for a head coach at a blue blood program, you usually trace it back to two things. And I think we're seeing both of those play out. Number one, a lot of it goes back to the initial staff you bring in.
Yeah.
And here we are in year four. And granted, Herb Hand was not part of that initial staff. He was added when you could add the 10th assistant. So if you want to include Herb Hand, that's fine. But of Tom Herman's initial hires, there's only three left. Herb Hand, if you want to include him, Stan Drayton, and Oscar Giles.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah. Everybody else has either been fired, what replaced, what have you.
Oscar Giles is
when
amazing.
When you're in year four, Rod, and you're having to make that many changes, not because guys are getting promoted and getting other jobs, but because you decide you need a reboot, that's usually an indication you did a bad job with your initial staff.
I agree with this.
The second thing is that usually dooms a coach at a blue blood program is you don't understand the environment and the nuances of the job.
Or the magnitude of it.
And when you look at when Mac, I just talked about, you know, Tom, when Tom Herman gets the job, like Matt laid it out perfectly. Like it's everything seemed good, and it was almost like, yeah, it was all sham. Just go in the hole and start coaching football, whatever. But when you look at when Matt got the job, and you guys feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but this is just me trying to think back to the winter of 1997. It really felt like Mac got to Texas and started just asking questions. Well, what's wrong? Why is it not working here? What needs to happen? What needs to get fixed? What do we need to do? And it was, okay, you need to get Coach Royal back involved. You need to get the Letterman back involved. Got to upgrade facilities. Rod, you talked about in your recruiting pitch, we're a Reebok school. No, we've got to be a Nike school. We've got to be on the cutting edge of all this stuff. And Mac worried about – and I know the Nike thing seems like a minute detail, but
it
all of those things added up to – and part of that was, who do I need to talk to? Who do I need to know on a first name basis? Who do I, in terms of just the donor base and the alumni base? Mack Brown understood what it takes to not just win at Texas, but to survive and have longevity at a place like Texas. Mack understood that, and Charlie Strong really didn't waste his time with it. And it seems, Rod, to the point you made earlier, Matt, the point you made, it just seems like Tom Herman either didn't get it or thought it wouldn't matter. One or the other.
I don't know. Some people, it almost like he mocks it at times, especially the Oklahoma Texas thing. You know, it was just weird. You know, your fourth year to say that
you can't.
It's like your first year. We get it. All right. I mean, you hadn't been immersed in the culture. You've been head coach here for, you know what I mean, for 4 years. You played Oklahoma 5 times. See why you've been here.
Yeah,
you were.
What the
it's
hell?
A situation where it's
you worked.
To your point about the little things that add up, and it's like, dude, what? You know what I mean? That's and I know it sounds crazy, but it is one of those. It's one of those things like Mack Brown, those little things that he believed were important about the perception of the program and stuff, things that are unbecoming of the head coach at Texas.
And it's like, even though you say you don't care, if personally you don't care, if everybody else in your fan base cares, just at least be respectful of it or acknowledge it.
Yeah, that's kind of
possibly for something so minuscule, or it can piss off the whole fan base.
Yeah, no. It's just, but you talk about it. Urban Meyer doesn't. I think he doesn't use M or something weird like that.
He doesn't say Michigan.
Doesn't say Michigan.
When he was the head coach at Ohio State, you never heard him say Michigan. It was always that school up north.
Yeah, like I mean, and I know people think it's silly, but dude, for Ohio State fans, that means a lot to them.
The other thing he did, which I didn't know about this, and I'm guessing it's true because I've heard it from enough people now and published reports and otherwise. Like media members covering Ohio State, if you wore like a Michigan blue polo shirt or shirt, he'd call you out on it.
Yeah,
like
that's awesome.
Yeah,
but that's how
he's
that's
endearing himself to fans. Though he's saying, "I'm one of you." You know what I mean? Yeah. One of us. Right from Wolf of Wall Street, one of us. That's all Longhorn fans want. Yeah. One of us. And right now, Longhorn fans don't feel like he's one of us.
Nope.
One of. And now as a Texas, another example. Why do they love Sam Ellinger? One of us. That's all we want. You want a coach that's one of us, and he's not right now. Seems like an outsider.
Yeah, it's strange. But, guys, in the time we've got left on the show, let's go ahead and get into the on-field product. And, Rod, I know you've got some numbers that you want to share and that you need to share in terms of We talked last week about kind of what we were, what has surpassed our expectations, or what about this team has surpassed expectations, where has Texas failed to meet expectations, what were we wrong about, what were we right about. And, Rod, I'll start with you because we had major concerns about this receiver group going into the year. And a lot of those concerns have now been justified because Tom Herman comes out after the Oklahoma game and says one of their biggest issues on offense is they got receivers who can't get off press coverage.
It's terrible.
But I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but Rod, this goes back to your point, the point you always make. Tom Herman's terrible at self-scouting. Like, the three of us on this podcast, we don't get paid to evaluate the personnel in this program. We knew they had receivers that were going to have problems getting off press coverage. We knew it was going to have to be a deal where, hey, you're going to have to scheme these guys open. You don't have Colin Johnson or L.J. Humphrey or Devin Duvernay that can just go out and get theirs. You're going to have to help these guys. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, Rod, they haven't helped them. They don't. They haven't understood their personnel enough.
They haven't. I will say that I believe it's more about adjustments, because when I self-scouting, I guess you could, it depends on how you want to use the term. To me, self-scouting is.
Sorry, a dog's just great, staring dog's at just me. Staring, I had to look and smile.
Self-scouting is issues that exist over a long period of time, right? That are systemic. Then that means you're bad at self-scouting, right? He's bad. For him to go into the season thinking they were going to be a good tackling team, terrible at self-scouting in that respect. Same thing with penalties, right? You're one of the worst tackling teams last year and one of the most penalized. You should have been in deep diving about how to solve those issues.
Right now, 75th of 77, according to PFF.
So that's a long period of time. The bump and run thing on the wide receivers on the outside, and I agree with you, during the year, we've talked about how you don't have Colin Johnson, you're not going to have Devin Duvernay, you need to scheme these guys open. But I still think they believe at practice can give you kind of a false perception. If you're a bad coach and your guys are a bad football team, practice can give you a false perception as a coach of, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. we got our product right. Right. I think because when you got TCU that played bump and run, and TCU is probably one of the better secondaries in the country, played bump and run and played snug coverage, their corners really tight. I mean, play like 5 or 6 yards off the wide receivers and shuffle out. When they play that on Texas, and Texas was almost shocked by it, and they really, I think they only had three receptions when they threw the wide receivers on the outside against TCU corners and that type of coverage. That should have been a red light to Tom Herman. All right, we got to adjust. All right, guys. So next week, if Oklahoma tries to do that, we'll have an adjustment. You should be able to adjust on the fly to that, because you just found out, okay, damn, my wide receivers can't get off bump and run coverage. I didn't know that.
Disrupt the rhythm of the
offense.
Yeah,
okay, you know what? Then let's figure out something else. Let's scheme them open. Let's put our receivers inside. Let's put them in bunch formations with starburst releases. Let's put them on the move and motion, all that kind of thing. And against Oklahoma, they actually played bump and run coverage more than TCU did against Texas and were just as effective. So to me, it's like, so what the hell did you do, Andre Coleman, in practice then? What the hell did you do after getting dominated by TCU's corners? What did y'all do all week? Because they didn't get any better.
Yeah.
So that to me is more of adjustments. Things over a long period of time, to me, that's when I'll give you the self-scouting stuff. That's, you know, and now if the bump and run thing continues over 3-4 weeks, now you're bad at self-scouting. Because now you can't even fix a systemic problem that you found out about in week two or week 3. Hell, because Texas Tech actually did a little bit too, but they were unsuccessful because they're a bad defense.
Yeah. I'm talking about self-scouting from the standpoint of not understanding what your personnel can do. Like we talked about it last week, like the fade ball to Joshua Moore, where you're ever since Joshua Moore stepped foot on campus, Tom Herman's talked about his weight and physicality, and he needed to fix those things. He does some things well, but he needs to fix those things. So why are you going to ask your wide receiver who, again, I love Joshua Moore as a player, but he's 180 pounds soaking wet with 2 bricks in his pocket. Mm-hmm. Why are you going to ask him to go body up a corner on a fade ball?
To me, that's evaluation. Mm. Right,
that's just not knowing your personnel.
That's just straight up evaluation. Though that's evaluating the receiver skill set. So you evaluate his skill set and you decided fade ball. That's bad. I know I'm being specific about it because it's just football.
To me,
that's evaluation, and it's different. And that means you're bad at evaluating your talent you're bringing in, which will actually, in my opinion, explains why you're bad at developing talent, because you can't even evaluate the talent to be able to go, this guy does this well. All right, let's put him in this position.
We need to bring up the Malcolm Epps conversation from last year.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's bad at evaluation. He's bad at adjustments. Go look at the record when they're down at halftime or down going into the fourth quarter.
I've got some some numbers.
So you're
here
bad at adjustments real time. You're bad at evaluation. You're bad at self-scouting for the long term. What the hell are you good at this point? Your team is really they're heavily penalized. Tackling is really bad. You missed 44 tackles in the last 3 weeks. I gotta say, other than Sam Ehlinger, I'm not sure what this team is good at. And I know they'll be like, well, the offense is good. No. The Sam Ehlinger is good.
There's three. Yeah.
The offense is good. Sam Ehlinger is good.
There's three players I don't find fault with.
Joseph Osai is good. That's it.
Sam Ehlinger, Joseph Osai, Sam Cosmi. Because I disagree.
Those three.
I disagreed with Tom Herman when he came out after the Oklahoma game and said, well, nobody played good on the offensive line. No, I went back and watched the game twice. You've got one really good player at left tackle and four guys who did a terrible job. That's what my eyes saw.
It's even worse. Because that means you got a foundational player. You got, right? You have a piece to build the offensive line around, and you're still bad?
Awful.
And run blocking and pass
blocking?
And
Rod, I've charted all the sacks,
terrible, man.
All the sacks they've given up.
It's terrible, man.
All the sacks they've given up in Big 12 play. All of them are either – do you realize against Oklahoma, they gave up a sack on a four-man pressure against a seven-man protection?
Wow. So we had three men out.
Like, I had to watch it. Like, I seriously watched like 10 times. They ended up, like, somebody, I think it was Nick Benito, I think was a spy on that play. So it ends up being kind of a five-man rush. It's an initial four-man rush with a spy. But you had a seven-man protection. And your quarterback still got sacked.
Wow.
And that was an adjustment whenever in the second half he was using Benito the way he was. And
yeah, because you're right, he wasn't early.
No, it wasn't, and that's just a good adjustment.
It's like
and
the only time Texas had success offensively was that stretch in the fourth quarter where Alex Grinch, for some reason, I guess brain farted and decided not to spy Sam Ehlinger all of a sudden in two-minute situations, and Texas went through the Oklahoma defense like crap through a goose. They just went up and down the field. But, Rod, can you give me those numbers on bump and run coverage real quick just so we can wrap up the conversation about the wide receivers?
Yeah. Sure. They're depressing, but I'll give them to you.
Yeah.
I was just curious how often Texas was facing bump and run coverage and how often they were beating it. So last 2 weeks against Oklahoma and TCU, they used bump and run technique at the line of scrimmage to disrupt Texas' passing game. They both utilized press technique with at least one DB, because sometimes it was one DB, sometimes it was both of the corners on the outside, over 40% of the time. Oklahoma was around 46%, and TCU was around 42%. Texas wide receivers, in the last 2 weeks, when facing bump and run coverage and press technique, they have two receptions for 15 yards when targeting a primary defender using that technique.
Not good.
Yeah, and those two receptions, I think Jared Wiley's one, and then Jordan Whittington had like a little drag route or something. And Jared Wiley makes sense because he's big and he can big body those guys on the outside. But that's
Jordan Whittington,
who's now dealing with the abdominal injury. And based on our report at Hornets 24/7, we'll see what happens throughout the week. But it looks like he's not going to be available for the Baylor game.
Yeah. So,
Rod, you talk about adjustments, and nowhere are adjustments more evident for a coaching staff than the third quarter. You got a chance to really reset it.
Oh,
go to halftime.
Very true.
And come out in the third quarter. And in three Big 12 games, this offense, this team, has just been abysmal. Doesn't even begin to describe how bad they've been in the third quarter. I'm just going to run down the numbers, and I'll let you guys discuss it. Texas has been outscored in the third quarter, and I've in a lot of my research, I'm throwing the UTEP game out. I'm not even kidding.
I agree.
It's diluting the sample.
I agree.
Texas in three Big 12 games been outscored in the third quarter 38-14. You're being outgained 370-124. Offensive yards per play, 3.4. Yards per play allowed, 5.8. Texas on third down in the third quarter, 1 for 10. Wow. Opponents on third down, 7 for 13. Matt, this is one I know you look at play differential. Texas total plays in the third quarter in three Big 12 games, 36. Opponent total plays in those three third quarters, 64. Texas does have 55 rushing yards. They're averaging 5 yards per carry, but they've only run the ball 11 times.
How much did Sam I wanted to?
For those 55 yards, Sam Ehlinger had a 36-yard carry against TCU.
I was
going to
say, yeah. Oh, that was his longest of his career, too, wasn't it?
Opponent rushing yards, 151. You're giving up 4.4 yards per carry. That means Texas in the third quarter in Big 12 play, guys, has faced 44 rushing attempts. non-scoring drives for Texas. I've counted eight. You had an interception, 5 3 and outs, 7 punts, 1 scoring drive. That was a touchdown drive against TCU. Opponent non-scoring drives, I've counted 6. You had a fumble, 3 3 and outs, 4 punts, and a missed field goal. Opponent scoring drives in Big 12 play, though, 5. 3 touchdown drives and 2 field goal drives. The 3 touchdown drives were all in the Oklahoma game. Penalties in the Rod, third quarter. This is three quarters. Penalties for Texas, 9 penalties for 88 yards. Opponent penalties, 7 for 56. Oklahoma didn't have a single penalty in the third quarter. Texas has 6 first downs. Those 3 opponents, 23 first downs. So you aren't just losing the third quarter. You're getting boat race dominated. Old Rod, what do you say? Old Testament style butt whooping in the third quarter. And that's when your adjustments, that's when your prowess as a coaching staff is supposed to shine through, and you're just being obliterated. You're losing games because you're so bad in the third quarter.
And that's why you've been in all those holes that Sam has had to dig out of in the fourth quarter just to be able to be just barely even by the end of the game.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Matt, because I've got Sam Ellinger's numbers in terms of those quarter splits in Big 12 play. You ready for this? Sam Ellinger in the third quarter in Big 12 play, 12 for 25, which is not good. 1 interception, 1 touchdown, 84 yards, 3 carries for 40 yards. But like we talked about, that 36-yarder against TCU was kind of diluting the sample.
The lack of adjustment. You have 25 pass attempts, 84 yards. That's about as bad as you can find for Sam Ellinger anywhere ever.
But go to the fourth quarter. And this is why, you know, this is why I'm not – you can fault Sam Ellinger, but Sam Ellinger is not the reason this team has lost 2 games.
Yeah, and I would say you can't fault Sam
Ellinger. I'm not counting the overtime against Texas Tech or the 4 overtimes against Oklahoma. This is just Sam Ellinger in the fourth quarter. 25 of 28, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. That was the fade ball to Joshua Moore in the OU game.
Okay.
287 yards, 13 carries for 98 yards.
Damn. Great numbers.
Yeah.
Sam Ellinger, you're so bad in the third quarter. Sam Ellinger basically has to go be Superman for you to be in the game late.
Missed the fourth quarter. And that's usually when they start picking up the tempo of the offense. Mm-hmm. They're behind, so they're like, you know what, let's go in 2-minute mode. They just put the ball in his hands. They stop running the ball because they can't run the ball, and there's no point in it because it's late and you're down double digits or something like that.
Yep.
And basically the running game is Sam scrambling. Sam drops back. There's nobody open or there's pressure.
Easy.
Right? And think about, and this is why it happened in the Oklahoma game. You go look at the inability of the wide receivers to get off bump and run coverage, the inability to run the ball, the pass protection issues, and essentially Sam Ellinger is just depending on his H wide receivers to help him out or whoever they got in the slot usually to get open, and he scrambles. That's what happened. The Oklahoma game was just him dropping back, nobody's open. I'm a scramble.
Can I give you some more numbers, Rod, to show you how much Sam Ellinger is the identity of this offense? Like, there's no question. What is the identity of the offense? It's Sam Ellinger.
It's Sam Ellinger. Mm-hmm. It's a Sam Ellinger show. It's reverted back to 2017.
This is according to Pro Football Focus. Texas and Pro Football Focus charts it differently. They don't count. They just count like run plays, design quarterback runs, handoffs to running backs. They don't count sacks for rushing numbers. Okay. So Texas, according to Pro Football Focus, 132 carries, 724 yards, 7 touchdowns, 22 first downs. That's the run game. Mm. But of those numbers, Rod, this is Sam Ellinger on scrambles.
Scrambles alone.
This season.
Okay.
Yeah. And keep in mind, Sam only had 3 carries in the UTEP game, so all this is pretty much going to be the 3 Big 12 games. Sam Ellinger on scrambles this year, 18 carries, 195 yards, 2 touchdowns, 9 first downs. When you take Sam Ellinger's scrambles, out of the run game numbers, according to Pro Football Focus, your yards per carry goes from 5.5 to 4.6, almost a yard less per carry when you take out Sam Ellinger's scrambles.
Yeah.
He is your
offense. He's the running game.
You've regressed back to 2017 where your offense is
Sam Ellinger,
just put it in 11's hands and hope for the best.
That may be the biggest indictment of Tom Herman right now is that you brought in Yurcich, and I know they had the truncated offseason and all that kind of stuff, but, man, you failed Sam Ellinger. We did not maximize it. Now we just got Sam going out there playing with heart and playing with, you know, he's just letting him hang out there. That's what he's doing. I mean, in the fourth quarter, it's pretty much him just reverting back to putting the team on his shoulders and it shouldn't be that. He needs help, and he's not getting any help.
Sorry, guys. I told the guys before the show I went and just nuts on the legal pad over the weekend, so I'm flipping around. Rod, Sam Ehlinger's played 5 games against Oklahoma. He was 1-4. He probably just had his last shot at Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah, he's done with him.
But these are the is Sam Ehlinger's production in 5 games against Oklahoma.
It's unbelievable.
Completing 60.7% of his passes, so basically your 61% completion rate. Averaging over 287 passing yards per game. 7 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He's at 323 rushing yards, 3.2 per carry. And that's including the sack numbers, by the way, which I'll get to those in a minute. Averaging 64.6 rush yards per game in those 5 games. 12 rushing touchdowns. Sam Ehlinger has 12 rushing touchdowns in 5 career games against Oklahoma.
Wow.
And then you take into consideration that in those 5 games, he's been sacked a total of 21 times, and the net lost yardage is 136 yards he's lost on those 21 sacks. If it wasn't for L.J. Humphrey and Colin Johnson in the 2018 game, Sam would be 0-for against Oklahoma and – all these great numbers would have nothing to show for it.
And strangely enough, you could argue he is the most hated Texas quarterback in the Texas OU rivalry in terms of the Oklahoma side. They hate him. They hate him. They hate him. They really do. And I don't really – I'm with you. He's 1-4, so I don't get the hatred. But Baker Mayfield and him had their feud, and they have a feud going back to high school. Then you got the Kyler Murray thing.
Him and Kyler and Mayfield after
they,
a loss.
Yeah, and I think they've seen him so much, just like you said. And he's been so effective against them. Like, he really has. He's lit him up pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And, he hadn't got the win, but I just think all of those things, it's strange now. I believe that they hate him probably more than they've hated any quarterback in the Texas OU rivalry in the history of it. And that's strange to say because there's been VY, but there's been, Peter Gardner, but they didn't hate Peter Gardner didn't get the vitriol and the hatred that Sam does.
Nope. Wasn't even like Case or Colt McCoy. They never even respected Colt until like 2009, and then it was already over. But you're right. Sam
didn't hate Colt
that
much either.
No.
They didn't hate Colt the way they hate Sam. I remember Colt being there. They didn't hate him like that.
I agree.
They respected Colt more.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I didn't even think they respected him until he beat him in 08. It took him like 4 years before they even respected him, which is crazy. But yeah, just to round off your Sam numbers too, another crazy thing, yards after contact, 148 of his 294 he's got after contact. So we're talking about most quarterbacks go down at contact when you're running out there against other athletes. It's not as if you get more than half your yards after contact.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
He's a unique weapon. He really is. And they wasted him.
Yeah.
I mean, not wasted, but he did not meet his expectations, and he didn't hit the ceiling that he could have under a different offense.
Tom Herman failed to do the one objective that we said he had for this offense going into the season. Can you maximize Sam Ehlinger?
He did not.
No.
He did not.
Because as good as the numbers are, I think we're on agree. If you grade Sam the last 3 games, he's probably a B-.
Except in the clutch time.
Except in the fourth quarter where you can't argue with those numbers.
Yeah, clutch time,
But overall, the overall body of work, he's probably a B-.
Yeah.
A C-plus if you're
a pretty
harsh
grader. No, he hasn't
been great.
In that Oklahoma game, he had 11 deep passes of 20 yards or more. He connected on 0 of them.
Yeah, a couple of them were open that he just missed
missed guys. He went 3-of-17 with 2 interceptions. 9 quarterback like incompletions, basically his fault incompletions, and a 2.2 passer rating on throws 10 or more yards downfield. He was not very effective, but he had 7 total runs of 10 or more yards, and 6 of those 7 came in the final 5.5 minutes in the fourth quarter in overtime.
Understands the situation.
And they were all scrambles. 5 of those 6 were scrambles.
He's so comfortable out there.
Backyard football, man.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, there's been times when maybe a throw's been errant, but his decision-making process and understanding what the defense is doing against him and then being able to diagnose, like, his recognition in those situations to know when to vacate and just go and take what he needs. And it's able to – I mean, it's the ultimate threat in college football, which is why it's so frustrating as a fan, because you wait to get a guy like this so you can have a chance to win a championship, and it's got to be even more frustrating for a kid like Sam who's played so well but still never really even came close to that point.
Rod, if I'm charting this right, and I'm kind of doing this on the fly, I believe if I'm looking at it right, Texas has 17 explosive runs this year, runs of 10 yards or more. Sam Ehlinger's got 11 of them.
Wow.
Wow. Makes sense. That's you can count one crazy. Rojo. I remember like one Keontae, one Bijan.
Keontae Ingram had a couple 10-yarders in that that Texas Tech game.
There you go.
That's unbelievable. It's the Sam Ellinger show.
Yeah.
Once again, unfortunately for Sam, because I think it his freshman year, this is not a big deal for Sam to have the offense have to depend on him this much. But now in his senior year, I'm with you. This is troubling because now you should know his strengths and weaknesses. You know what he's good at. And there's not much he really can't do. And for him to be struggling with the intermediate passing game and the short passing game, I hate to say it, he's regressing.
But, so, Rod,
if you let Sam regress, it's crazy.
Keeping with the Sam Ellinger theme and the receiver theme, as we look to the Baylor game, you know what Baylor's going to do. I mean,
they're smart, bump and run.
Dave Aranda's defense, like when Dave Aranda was at LSU, that's all they did. LSU still does. Like you're going to play man coverage, and if I'm Dave Aranda, there's nothing about this Texas wide receiver core that leads me to believe why can't our guys go do that?
If Oklahoma can play bump and run coverage against you, then I ain't gonna lie. I'm not Oklahoma's like I mean anybody can because Oklahoma doesn't have elite DBs on the outside and twists and stunts. Listen, you bump and run and you just run lots of twists and stunts. That's what you do against Texas. That's how you get to Texas. That's how you put Sam on the brink of a collapse in every game. Now, he comes back in the fourth quarter every time, but he often reaches that brink. He has a bad third quarter or, you know, a slow few series, and that's because usually the offensive line ends up breaking down and his wide receivers can't get open.
And this offense on third down, like, it is imperative for this offense to stay on schedule because third down this year, right, I chart on third downs. Texas, when they're 9-plus on third down, they're 4 for 23. But the fact that you've had 23 situations through three conference games where you're in third and nine or longer, and it's—
And how, what'd you say? What's the success rate? What's the percentage?
4 for 23.
4 for 23 on third and
two
nine.
Two of those
plus.
Came in a TCU game, if I'm not mistaken.
Jared Wiley, 52-yard pass. That was like a third.
And then he had a third and 10.
Yeah.
He had two of those, remember? So, against Gary Patterson's defense, which is usually very unlikely that you'll get third and 20-something. So, that's crazy. It should be worse than that.
You basically had to break a Jacob Wiley out of, like, the little glass case.
Jared
like,
Wiley.
Just, it was there, like, oh, yo, Jared Wiley. But it was like you basically had no respect for him. He was just running wide open. But
those numbers are just—
That gets back to personnel, though, Rod. Like, I get Cade Brewer's put in his time in the program, but, man.
I know.
I know what my eyes tell me.
I know.
My eyes tell me if you're going to roll one primary tight end, it should probably be the guy that's made plays.
You said he was going to reward production. That's what you said.
Well, and that's the main thing when you look at this situation. It's like you got the one that maybe has upside, more volatility, maybe could also have some deficiencies, but there's upside, and it's not an insult to a player that if you're just a good, solid tight end, it's like, well, yeah, but you're really going to lock up a lot of your defense or your offense and the capabilities that are there. And then if there's no upside, it's limiting your ceiling. So if you're sort of locking up other positions and making them possibly less volatile and less explosive by only playing something that you feel more comfortable with but has less upside, and just because of consistency, it really makes me wonder about what is motivating these decisions whenever you aren't going after and taking the inherent risks needed in those situations that might reward them.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. The rotations and substitutions don't make a whole lot of sense. But, Rod, real quick, before we get out of here on the Baylor game, you know, like I said, if I'm Dave Aranda, there's nothing that leads me to leave. I can't just go in there with my corners and play bump and run, especially with no Jordan Whittington. Oof. We'll see if Jake Smith is going to play. I mean, you take those two. If those two guys are out of the equation, then, yeah,
I don't want to.
I'm pressing up all day if I'm Baylor.
If those two guys can't play, that's a doomsday scenario for that offense.
Because you've funneled everything through that position, and if that position's injured, you're screwed.
Boom.
And
you're
that's only an indictment of your own self. Like,
Josh,
that can only
Joshua
blame you for
Moore,
that.
Joshua Moore, Brendan Schooler, who don't give you in the short passing game and the quick game near what Whittington
and
or Smith
Schooler's the one that they used in that role earlier this year when both weren't on the field. But, I mean, that can work against UTEP. I don't know if that's going to work against other teams.
And it worked against Texas.
Prove me wrong, Schooler, that'd be awesome.
It worked against Texas Tech, but.
It's true. Different defense.
Brad, I ask you this as we get out of here and give you the final shot, because, Matt, you got the PFF missed tackle numbers right. I know you're really harsh when you grade missed tackles and really do that intensively. If you're a Texas fan, as bad as the tackling has been, is there any hope that that can get to the point where you're at least a, now I don't want to say a good tackling team, at least a competent tackling team.
Get it to single digits right now. That's, I think you got to have goal, even with the penalty too, right? I think just get them to single digits. You can just get, you've had double digit penalties and double digit missed tackles the last 3 weeks. Get it to single digits. And I know that's baby steps, right? Get it to eight. If you get it to single digits, you'll probably only have one loss right now this year.
Yeah.
Instead of two losses. And who knows, you may be 4-0, depending on the situation. That's how I think, that's how fragile it is. So I got 44 missed tackles. Like I said, and I,
Matt, you know what Pro Football Focus
I only have them overall 75th of 77 in their grading system. I don't have the exact numbers that they have, though.
75th out of how many?
77.
Yeah, so they're pretty bad.
Yes, as bad as it gets. And you know who's but you know what? What's the truth here? It's an epidemic because you know who's number 77?
Who?
North Carolina.
Tackling really is a problem in America.
It's an epidemic in America.
It is. See, I told you.
That is awesome.
But Rod, do you know where missed tackles
Oddly,
are really?
Florida's between the two at 76.
Do you know? Okay. And Florida's been brutal on defense.
Wow,
this year.
That's awesome.
Rod, do you know where the missed tackle numbers really show up? It shows up when you're trying to stop the run because Texas has given up 16 explosive runs this year. By the way, somebody can take that explosive runs comment and splice that together and make me say something vile, but I digress. Texas had allowed 16 runs that are explosive in nature, but in Big 12 play, they faced 129 rushing attempts. So 63.3% of the rushing yards you've given up in Big 12 play are only coming on 12.4% of the rushing attempts you've faced. So that means you're holding up.
You're holding up.
But teams are just sticking with the run, knowing, hey, if we continue to pound Texas at some point, they won't fit a gap right. They'll miss a tackle and we'll pop one.
So linebackers are attacking. They're just attacking the linebackers. They know if they at one point those linebackers are gonna miss an assignment.
They're gonna miss a fit.
They're gonna take on the block with the wrong shoulder, whatever it is, and that's when you'll pop it. They know.
Am I wrong? Because Rod, when I watched the Oklahoma game, that was my thought. Like your defensive line continues to play well. Yeah. You're just so bad at the second level right now that's
where most of your missed tackles are on defense.
Your defensive line's like Sam Ellinger. Your defensive line basically has to be perfect.
Pretty much. And you got one of the best players in the country in your D line, Joseph Asai, and you're still missing a lot of tackles. It's troubling
with that guy too this season. It's like, he's really good. Don't get many of those.
You don't get many. And Chris Ash, I know he's supposed to be kind of a tackling, expert. It doesn't look like these guys are absorbing the lessons they learned because I still see diving. I still see guys just trying to shoulder tackle guys. I see a lot of bad technique.
Don't
no
break
wrapping
bad
up.
Habits for life.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, there's some stuff injury wise with this team that I think you can very much put on strength and conditioning. You guys, we talked about a lot. Anytime you have soft tissue injuries, that to me is a strength and conditioning issue. If you want to stop having so many shoulder injuries, stop just throwing shoulders into guys when you tackle.
Yeah.
Stop trying to be like the ultimate warrior and like shoulder block takedown somebody in the middle of the ring. Just wrap up and make a tackle.
Wrap up and make a tackle.
Yeah, there isn't one player, though, that I wouldn't expect more to have a shoulder brace than B.J. Foster with the way he plays. Though it's like literally that dude comes in.
He's feast
or
famine.
It makes total sense.
He's going to whiff or he's going to knock you out. Like that is B.J. Foster in a nutshell. You know
100%.
At this point,
take it, man.
I'll take it.
he did knock out Overshone on that one long run.
He might knock out his old man, Friendly Fire, but he's going to knock somebody out.
B.J. Foster is like
he's your ride or die.
Definitely not this kind, but like I think of like old school Big 12 DBs, like he's not this kind of player yet, but like Roy Williams at OU or like Dwayne Slay at Texas Tech, where it's going to be one or the other. It's either going to be a missed tackle or somebody might be going to the hospital. I don't know which one it is.
It might be, exactly. No, it is. Yeah. I've watched of it. He led the team in tackles versus Oklahoma.
13 tackles. Man, that's the thing with B.J. Foster. Like the play he made on Charleston Rambo at the goal line where he read that rub concept
and broke on it.
If you could bottle that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bottle
gotta
that.
Harness it, man. He's got it. It's in him. Yes. It is in him, man. No, you see
it's
it.
It's bursting out
it
of him.
It flashes, and then you're like, and then he'll have another play where he'll just, he'll just whiff. So
I think he
needs more reps. He just needs to play. I think he'll get better when he plays more. I just think he's been starved for reps because think about last year. had a hard time trying to fit him in, and even this year they've had a hard time trying to fit him in.
And he was hurt most of the year.
He was hurt. Yeah, he just needs reps, man. He'll get better. Just like Overshown. Overshown is getting better.
Yeah, he is.
Overshown's
just, it's
going.
It's just, it's a process. He's just started playing linebacker, and even Chris Ash said it's. Listen, he's our best. He's our best choice, basically, at linebacker. But we know he's going to have growing pains, and he's going to have growing pains all year long because he just started playing the position.
Yeah, and that dude, he was out there, I believe, all 92 snaps against Oklahoma. Like he played, he doesn't leave.
They need, he can cover too.
It's amazing.
Well, against Oklahoma, they had those fullbacks and tight ends out there. You can just put Overshown out there, and at least you don't lose too much.
And think about that though. What you ask him to do, how much ground he covers, and he does it every single play,
special,
undersized
man.
At that
and
position. Yeah, he's going to be real good in
the
NFL.
The problem at linebacker, though, guys, it goes back to Chris Ash knew when he took this job you were very, very deficient at that middle linebacker position. And you have no margin for error now because of the Dele Adeoye injury. At least you might have been able to – like, we never got the competition we thought we were going to get with Adeoye and Juwan Mitchell because Adeoye was hurt most of the camp, and now he's probably done for the year after the shoulder surgery.
You're right.
So you got to ride with Juwan Mitchell. And – you know, I think the TCU game is a perfect example of like when it can really go bad because Juwan Mitchell gets called for targeting, Adeoye gets hurt. You have no choice but to just say Court Jaquess. Best of luck, young man. Yeah. And Court Jaquess,
I would say Court Jaquess got good instincts. He just doesn't. He can't make all the plays physically.
Yes,
sideline to sideline, but he's got great instincts.
Yeah,
in the phone booth, he makes those plays. In the phone booth, but the Big 12 isn't playing.
Put him in 1995.
He's 1997. He beat all Big 12.
I can't fault Court Jaquess for just look. He's giving you everything he's got.
Yes, he
but
is.
At some point, Rod, like you said, the deficiencies are gonna be there.
He was a walk on at one point.
I think the problem is, and also it's a good thing. He's one of your best linebackers.
Yes.
It's good and a bad
That's an
thing.
Indictment of That's, where you're
it's,
at.
It's good for the walk-on program and showing where it is, but it's bad for your overall talent.
You guys watched West Virginia's defense at all this year and seen Tony Fields?
Is he killing it?
Yeah.
How did you not get him or the brother Schooler?
I was told they didn't want Colin Schooler. I'm not.
Beggars can't be choosers.
Not saying it's right or wrong.
You mean you didn't want him? What you talking about?
We got
about,
Jaquess.
Man? You should have took everything at linebacker. That's crazy to me. Yep.
We'll see what happens with throughout the week with the size of Texas deal, with Tom Herman's future, and
Monday press conference. That'll be interesting.
If we get to Saturday and there is a football game played, hopefully there is, because man, this program needs a win, Rod. They need it like the desert needs rain, man.
Ain't no guarantee they're going to get a win.
Yep, the line's going down in both directions.
They need an opportunity for a win.
It's true.
Yeah, Texas has lost 2 points on the betting line. Baylor's lost a point. Overall, the games went down by 3. Texas still favored by 10.5, but it's going in Baylor's favor, and the over-under's coming down. So they're saying less points, and Baylor's going to be scoring more. So right now, the bookie's got it at a 36.5 to 26, if you were to go in play.
Before we get out of here, let me give you the number one more time. Herman in Big 12 play. As a 6-point or more favorite, 4-9-1 against the spread with 2 outright losses.
Not great.
Not good.
Not good. Not good. Not good. Especially after the tumultuous week. That's going to be tough.
Pretty.
Yeah. All right, Matt, thanks for everything, man.
You're more than welcome.
Rod, we appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody at the Austin Radio Network and the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com, where you can hear Rod B on the Triple Option each and every weekday from 3 to 7.
Shameless plug.
You can also get myself and Craig Way each and every weekday on Light the Tower from 10 to noon. And thanks to Matt, you can get all of our archives, our classic interviews and shows. It's all available on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
Don't forget to like us and leave us a review anywhere you get your podcast. Just search Horns 24/7 Podcast, Apple Play. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcast, just search Horns 24/7 Podcast to get us, Flagship, and State of Recruiting. And don't forget to like us and leave us a 5-star review. For the Horn family, for the Horns 24/7 family, I'm Jeff Howell. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again on the next episode.
You've been listening to Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com. Remember, for the latest Longhorn news 24/7, visit Horns247.com.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.